to the Ordinary Extraordinary Cemetery, where every death had a life and every life had a story. My name is Jenny Johnson. And no, you are not going to hear Diane introduce herself today. Unfortunately, Diane is under the weather today. She contacted me earlier when we were going to be recording and said that she just didn't feel up to it. She swears it's not COVID, but she's just not feeling very good. So we want her to get better. I told her to rest instead, so you don't have to listen to just my voice drone on for this whole episode. I did drum up another co-host, and it happens to be...
I'm Dave Johnson.
My husband. So Dave normally is part of the podcast every week. You just don't get to hear him because he does all our sound engineering and puts everything together. But since Diane was unavailable tonight, I convinced Dave to jump on board in her place and help make this sound good. And since he's a professional radio personality and music programmer and all things radio, he's the perfect fill-in.
Well, I'll do my best.
So welcome.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome for being on. Actually, you've been on the air one other time on our show. You did provide the voice for our Christmas episode.
I was the peddler for the charity donation or whatever.
Yes, because we just needed one other voice. So he read a very small snippet. So you've heard his voice before, but today you guys will get to hear more of his voice. And what actually makes this even more fun having him on is the cemetery we're discussing today, he actually visited with me. So that kind of makes it more fun too. Unfortunately, Diane wasn't on this particular trip. So as we said on our last episode, I could do a whole series on Alaska cemeteries, and I was fortunate enough to be able to visit this summer. So I figured today would be a kickoff for that series, and we will be learning more about Gold Rush Cemetery in Skagway. The Gold Rush Cemetery is at the north end of town beyond the White Pass and Yukon Railroad's maintenance yards along the course of the Skagway River, its icy rushing water all milky with glacial flour. Skagway is surrounded by mountains, a valley town, about a mile from end to end and a half a mile wide. The streets form a grid the way they were laid out in 1897 when the gold stampede swept through. Gold Rush Cemetery is Skagway's oldest and most well-known cemetery. There are two others in the area, the Slide Cemetery and Pioneer Cemetery. And this is where you will find many stories of the town's first citizens buried. Gold Rush Cemetery was only used for a short time, from 1898 to 1908. After 1908, citizens of Skagway were buried in the new Pioneer Cemetery.
According to Murray Lundberg, a writer for the Explore North blog, records indicate that the first burial here occurred early in 1898 when the ground thawed. With the exception of one burial and a related scattering of ashes in 1943, the cemetery was not used after 1908, when what is now known as Pioneer Cemetery opened. A total of 174 burials in the Gold Rush Cemetery have been recorded, and there are four other graves immediately adjacent to the original cemetery. The grave sites of 41 of the burials is not known, and it is not known who is buried at 13 of the known grave sites. To further complicate the issue, there are 37 deaths recorded in Skagway during the years the Gold Rush Cemetery was being used, for which no burial information has been found. The Gold Rush Cemetery has been a popular stop on tours of Skagway since the 1920s, when tour operator Martin Itichen began bringing clients and developed trails, handrails, and signs.
And it is, I think we mentioned it in the last episode, that it was a stop on the trolley tours while we were there. There were several trolley tours that came through, and guides got out. They kept their group there for a few minutes, told them some stories, and then got them all back on the trolley, and they all skedaddled off to the next stop.
While we had taken a separate taxi directly from the cruise ship to the gravesite, and you guys were exploring, up comes a couple of trolleys, and my mom and my aunt got out because they had taken that tour. And I'm like, oh, hi, guys.
So yeah, we ran into our family while we were in the cemetery. It's a great place to run into them. In order to better understand the necessity of Gold Rush Cemetery, we first have to understand how Skagway, the last outpost to the Klondike, came to be. The town itself has a very colorful history, but for the purposes of this episode, we will mostly only be covering the history through 1908, since that's when the cemetery was technically closed to further burials. Before Anglos came to the area in 1887, the land that makes up Skagway and its surrounding area was inhabited by the Tlingit, meaning the people of the tides. The Tlingit were, and still are, mariners, fishermen, hunters, gatherers, and traders. Tlingit values do not permit waste. They use every bit of salmon, herring, hooligan, deer, seal, crab, clams, gumboots, mussels, seaweeds, berries, and all the land and water provide. They called the area Skakwa, meaning a windy place with white caps on the water. Nearby was a centuries-old trading route that became popular with early prospectors heading into the Yukon. In the 1880s, the U.S. Navy and Army established a federal presence in the area.
In June of 1887, Skokum Jim, a Tlingit packer from Dyea and Tangish, led steamship captain William Moore, a member of Canada's Ogilvie Survey Party, over a new pass up the Skakwa River Valley. It is later named White Pass for the Canadian Interior Minister. In October of that year, Moore returned with his son, Bernard. They lay claim to 160 acres in the valley floor and began work on a cabin and dock. They called the place Mooresville. A former steamboat captain on the rivers of British Columbia and Alaska, William Moore was an adventurer who had taken part in several gold stampedes in both North and South America. Like many other men mining in the North, he believed that gold in large quantities would be found, and had a vision that Skagway, with its deep water harbor and trail through the White Pass, would become the gateway to those gold fields. For the next 10 years, he and Bernard worked intermittently on improvements to their homestead and wharf.
In 1894 and 95, the first group of prospectors came to the area to explore Captain Moore's trail over White Pass in search of gold. On August 16, 1896, gold was discovered by Skookum Jim, George W. Carmack, and Dawson Charlie on Rabbit Creek, later called Bonanza, a tributary of the Klondike River, 600 miles from Skagway. They staked their claim, and the history of the area has been changed forever. By July 1897, news of the huge gold strike had become global news, and thousands of people began to swarm to Mooresville in hopes of striking it rich as well. While most of those stampeders continued on to the gold fields, some remained at Skagway to build a new community. They refused to recognize Moore's homestead claim and took over most of its land. Through litigation, the Moores were eventually awarded the land that their improvements were on, plus 25% of the assessed value of the land that had been forcibly taken from them.
Mooresville is replatted by surveyor Frank Reed as Skagway. Later in the fall of 1897, a post office and the first church and newspaper, the Skagway News, were established. Many pack animals perish on the crude White Pass, which will be dubbed Dead Horse Trail.
Which Dead Horse Trail is technically another cemetery in itself, because it's mostly dead animals, for anybody that's interested.
Oh.
Yeah, I guess you can still find, if you go along that trail, they were saying, I think I heard one of the guides mention, if you go along that trail, you will still find the bones of some of the horses and other animals that they were using as pack animals along that trail.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, pretty gruesome. Sorry, guys.
George Brackett builds a toll road to White Pass City, a tent city 15 miles up the valley. Canadian Mounties begin to guard the passes, although their government is claiming territory, including Skagway, where they briefly established a post. By 1898, Skagway's population booms to between 8,000 to 10,000 people. The Daily Alaska newspaper appears. The Chamber of Commerce and a volunteer fire department are organized. Construction begins in May on the White Pass and Yukon Route Railroad, and the first school opens in Union Church that June. As also happened in many boom towns, Skagway was the home to several saloons, most famously the Red Onion Saloon, and is a bustling red light district. And a necessity of every community is also its cemetery.
By 1899, the city had two more newspapers, the Daily Budget and Alaska Traveler's Guide. The building boom continued with construction of prominent city structures like the Arctic Brotherhood Hall and McCabe College, which was built on land donated by Captain Moore. Some buildings are shipped over from the declining town of Dyea. The school moved into a new building on 11th. About this time, the city became fire weary after seven downtown buildings were destroyed in May, and a forest fire destroyed an army post near Dyea. The troops, most of them Black Spanish-American war vets belonging to the 24th Buffalo Soldier Infantry, moved to Skagway. By 1900, however, the population was beginning to decline. According to the census taken that year, Skagway was home to just 3,117 residents. On June 28th, Skagway became the first incorporated city in Alaska. It beat Juneau by a day. On July 29th, the White Pass and Yukon Railroad, called the WP and YR, was completed between Skagway and Whitehorse with the Golden Spike ceremony at Carcross, Yukon. An ornate WP and YR administration building was completed next to the rail depot at 2nd and Broadway. The railway was also responsible for building a hospital.
Unlike many boom towns of the Gold Rush era, Skagway never completely died away, even after gold was no longer its primary source of income. The people of Skagway have remained resilient in the face of adversity, and Skagway's history is rich with stories that extend into today. And there is no doubt they will continue to make history in the future. Of course, because every life had a story, we have to share some of the life stories of those buried specifically in Gold Rush Cemetery. According to records, there are many buried there whose cause of death is listed as meningitis, typhoid, and consumption or tuberculosis. Several also died from pneumonia.
Patrick Comer from Tacoma, Washington, who died in 1903, Michelle Donnelly, who died in 1898, Nicholas Farrell, who died in 1902, Frederick George from Victoria, Canada, who died in 1902, Barney Gray, who died in 1901, Patrick Michael McFadden, who died in 1902, and James Meadham, who died in 1903, all died as a result of drowning. Some of the drownings occurred in the rivers in the area, while others occurred off the wharf or while they were out to sea. There are several others that died as a result of rock or snow slides.
While there were many families who settled in Skagway and made it their home, it was at times a rough and tumble place to be. There were many who were there to scam those who planned to work hard and honestly for their living, and many lost their lives as a result of murder, either because of their nefarious deeds or because they were defending themselves and their belongings. P.C. Bean was shot to death near Porcupine Hill. Patrick Barahman was shot and killed in the Klondike Saloon. Thomas Dukem was a local barber who first killed William M. Ray, a close friend, before turning the gun on himself. According to their death certificates, Bert Horton and his wife Florence Oliver Horton were murdered by, quote, Indians. 3-year-old Virginia Holkill was poisoned by her nursemaid, who gave her something to keep her from crying. And George Johnson met his end when he was shot and killed by one of the local ladies of the night.
Gold Rush's most well-known murder victims are Frank H. Reed and Jefferson R. Soapy Smith, who ultimately ended up killing each other. Frank Reed has the most impressive stone monument near the center of the cemetery. Carved of granite and surrounded by curbing, the inscription reads, Frank H. Reed died July 20th, 1898, aged 54 years. He gave his life for the honor of Skagway. Frank H. Reed was born in either 1844 or 1850 in Illinois. There's very conflicting records on his date of birth. According to a grandniece, it is thought the H was for Harold, although there are no current written records that prove this. Reed was a graduate engineer and a teacher in Linn County, Oregon, District 29 in the 1870s. In 1898, he went to Skagway and created the map of Skagway, which was adopted on March 6, 1898 by the city. He also served as a lieutenant in Mart Brown's Company of Oregon Volunteers. Some records indicate that after arriving in Skagway, he also worked as a bartender.
Jefferson R. Smith, better known as Soapy Smith, was born November 2, 1860 in Newnan, Georgia. Smith belonged to a well-educated, wealthy family. His great-grandfather owned one of the finest plantations in the area, and his father was a lawyer. But like many Southern families, their prosperity came to an end after the Civil War. In 1876, the family moved to Round Rock, Texas, where an 18-year-old Soapy would witness the killing of outlaw Sam Bass 2 years later. Sometime later, Smith moved on to Fort Worth, where he began his career as a bunco artist. He soon formed a small, close-knit group of rogues and thieves to perpetuate his scams. Becoming the king of the frontier con man as the gang moved from town to town, unsuspecting citizens practiced their game of choice, which included the shell game, three-card Monty, and other short cons that could be completed quickly.
By the late 1870s, Smith came up with his ingenious prize package soap sell swindle, whereby he could make money from a large crowd. It was from this scam that he earned his nickname, Soapy. The con began with Smith setting up a Kaiser, a suitcase on a tripod stand, on a busy street corner. In the suitcase would be piles of ordinary soap wrapped in plain paper. As curious passersby stopped to look, he would begin to wrap some of the soap bars with paper money, ranging from $1 up to $100. Rewrapping in the plain paper, he would mix them with the others and sell the soap for $1 to $5 per bar. In the crowd, Soapy would always have a shill, a quick to buy a bar of soap. So like a somebody who would pretend to buy it. Happily opening it to find a $100 bill. The crowd was then anxious to buy their own, which of course held nothing but a 5-cent cake of soap. For the next two decades, Smith continued the swindle with great success.
For several years, Smith settled down, making Denver his home, though Denver newspapers published that he was in complete control of the criminal and gambling underworld in their city and rightly accused him of being in cahoots with city politicians, including the police chief. His operations continued to prosper. Though his primary operations were in Denver, Soapy also expanded, and in 1885, he was working with another con artist in Leadville, Colorado, partnering with a con who went only by the name of Old Man Taylor. The two operated a successful shell game upon the many unsuspecting miners. However, by 1892, polite society in Denver had begun to demand anti-gambling and saloon reforms. Smith had also begun to lose his crown as the Denver boss, partly because of rival gangs such as the Blonger brothers, but also due to his bad temper and drinking problems. He had also become so well known that it was becoming difficult for his paid politicians to continue to turn a blind eye, as they had done for so many years.
Kind of makes me wonder. So his soap scheme, where he was putting the fake money in the soap, there's a company now, and I can't think of what they're called. I'm sure our listeners know, where you can buy like a bath bomb, and you put it in the water and then it dissolves and there's a ring in it. And sometimes the ring is worth like $10 and sometimes it's worth like $500. I did it once. I got a ring. I did get an actual ring. And I think when I looked up the value, it was like a $25 ring. And actually I wear it a lot. It's a really pretty ring. But I was thinking if maybe that's where they got their idea. It was from Soapy Smith and his dollars.
Who knows? I don't know. At least they're paying off.
They are at least, yeah, they're much more honest than Soapy was about his, that particular con. But also I was wondering, because you're a gambler sometimes.
Sometimes.
What's a shell game?
Oh, the shell game. Well, it's like they do it on The Prices, right? Where they take three shells and they'll hide a ball under the shell. But what they do is they usually palm it. And they don't necessarily put it under that shell. It might on a side one. And so you would move the shells around. And even though people kept an eye on the shell that they thought was actually had the ball underneath it, it never really did. It was a sleight of hand type of deal.
That's what I thought they meant.
The same thing with three-card Monty is that it's just like look for the queen in the three cards. And as they're moving the card so far, they actually do a move that makes the card move to a different location, a sleight of hand type of deal.
Right.
And so where you think, oh yeah, it's the center card, it's really the left card or the right card or somewhere else.
That's what I thought a shell game was, but I wasn't entirely sure. I just think it's kind of funny that they were able to use that for so long to fool so many people.
A rigged game of chance. Yeah.
Yeah. In April of 1894, Soapy and his brother were accused of murder. His brother was arrested, but Soapy managed to slip, yes, they did that on purpose, slip through the law's hands. When the Klondike Gold Rush began in 1897, Soapy saw all sorts of new opportunities and soon made his new home in Skagway, Alaska. Like other mining camps, it didn't take him long to claim himself as boss of the town, which he ran with an iron hand. Working from his saloon named Jeff Smith's Parlor, Soapy's cons began once again in earnest. His saloon soon became known as the Real City Hall, even though Skagway did have an official one. But some of the Skagway citizens were not so impressed with Soapy, whose heavy drinking and black temper had begun to get entirely out of hand.
After about 9 months of the domination and fleecing of the town, several Skagway citizens had had enough of the man, and a vigilante group who called themselves Committee of 101 threatened to drive Smith and his gang out of town. One of those members was none other than Soapy's former bartender, Frank H. Reed. Soapy retaliated by forming his own group, which he called the Committee of 303, to intimidate the first group. Soapy alleged that his group had more than 300 members, hoping to force the vigilantes into submission. It worked.
At least for a while. However, when Soapy's gang took some $2,600 in gold from a Klondike miner in an illegal three-card Monty game, the vigilantes reemerged and demanded that Soapy give him back his gold. And it's not in this, it's not written in here, but that particular miner was like a longtime miner. Like, he wasn't a newbie at it. It was not something he hadn't done before. Soapy, of course, refused, claiming that the miner had lost the gold fairly in a sporting game. The next night, on July 8, 1898, the vigilantes organized a meeting in Juneau, Alaska. Hearing of the meeting, Soapy decided to attend, arriving with a Winchester rifle draped over his shoulder. He was prevented from entering the meeting by four guards, one of the guards being Frank Reed. Frank and Soapy began to argue, and it wasn't long before they both pulled their weapons, firing upon each other. Smith's last words were reported to be, "My God, don't shoot." Soapy Smith was killed instantly. Frank Reed was taken to the local hospital, where he clung to life for 12 more days, finally dying on July 20th, 1898.
At the time of their deaths, Frank Reed was hailed as a town hero, and Soapy Smith was no more than a common criminal. Reed was buried with honors with an elaborate funeral in the center of the cemetery. Soapy Smith, who had been honored as the Marshal of Skagway's first 4th of July parade just days before his death, was deemed unworthy of a respectful burial for his crimes and was buried 3 feet outside the perimeter of the cemetery.
Which, like we said in the last episode, if you look at it now, you can't tell that's the outside of the cemetery. It's all kind of one big space, but I'm assuming at the time there may have been a fence or some other dividing line that said this is inside and this is outside. I also heard one of, and I don't mention it anywhere in our script today, but I also heard one of the guides that was stopped with the trolley tours mention that because the ground in the cemetery is so rocky that they used explosives to dig some of the graves. They had to actually
To open up the rock
to get down there. Yeah. And they claimed that at least one of the burials, the person is buried like in a standing position because they couldn't get it wide enough to lay them down. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's true or if that's hearsay, but I thought that was an interesting little tidbit that I overheard. It was kind of fun overhearing some of the guides while we were there.
We kind of got the extra free part of the tour just by eavesdropping.
Just because we were sitting there on the bench as they were all like doing their thing around the cemetery and I didn't want to be in their way, but then I could overhear what they were saying as well. We mentioned before that Skagway, like so many Klondike communities, had its own red light district. The women who worked as saloon girls and prostitutes in Skagway are women who have become legends. Sadly, many of these women were mere girls, some as young as 10 and 11 years old. Often, when other more respectable work could not be gained or did not pay enough to live on, prostitution was sometimes the only choice these ladies had. Like other mining camps of the Old West, vice played a big part in the gold rush days, as saloons, gambling halls, and prostitution were big revenue machines. The many women who worked as prostitutes in the boom towns of Skagway and Dyea, Alaska, and Dawson City in Canada came from all walks of life. Many followed the migration of thousands of gold seekers and their money, but others didn't enter the profession willingly. Abduction into the sex industry was common, as women were forced to work as prostitutes against their will. Others arrived with husbands or family who either died or deserted them. With few options to support themselves, they had little choice but to make money as prostitutes.
In Skagway, Ella D. Wilson was an African-American prostitute working in this dangerous profession. In May 1898, Ella transitioned from a citizen to a statistic when she was found dead. Cause of death? Murder. She was discovered in her bed with a pillowcase over her head and a gag in her mouth. Her wrists and ankles were tied together, her money and jewelry missing, and her trunk was rifled through. Everything pointed to a robbery gone wrong. Rumor had it that Ella had $2,000 in her possession. A well-known madam from Denver named Maddie Silks, who spent a little time in the area during the gold rush, accused the notorious Soapy Smith as one of the responsible for Ella's death. In Lawless Skagway, nothing came of this accusation. Just 5 weeks later, Soapy himself was dead. Ella Wilson's murder has never been solved, but she has not been forgotten. She rests in Gold Rush Cemetery, her grave marked by a simple wooden marker painted white. It reads, Ella Wilson died May 28th, 1898, aged 28 years.
There are so many more stories here that we wish we had time to share. Those of loving husbands, beloved wives, and darling children. Soldiers, miners, and those who worked and died on the trains. Those who walked in the shadows, and those whose light led their community through hard times and good times. Heroes such as James Mark Rowan, born September 24, 1864 in Tennessee, and who died on January 31, 1899 in Skagway. A hero not forgotten, loving husband and father, Deputy U.S. Marshal, killed in the line of duty, aged 33 years. He was killed just hours after his only child, James Mark, was born. Their stories continue to live on in their descendants and the residents of Skagway, who take time to share them year after year with the tourists who flock to their shores.
And actually, I had a really great time on the cruise on some of the stops and going to the cemeteries with you. It was kind of cool to see, otherly parts of the world. I mean, Alaska in itself is kind of like an otherworldly part to a lot of this here in the 48 states. A lot of it reminded me of Colorado with its mountain and stuff, but it's right next to the ocean.
Which
we're definitely not. So it was like ocean water, mountains right next to each other. And then, you know, taking the mile hikes into the towns to see these cemeteries was actually a lot of fun.
So. Well, and I was very grateful that you were willing to do that with me, because you don't normally go along with me on all my cemetery adventures and things that I'm doing. Usually you're like, okay, bye. Have a good time. See you when you get home. You'll send me a text every now and then to check up on me while I'm there. But you're not usually along for the ride. Did you learn anything about cemeteries that you didn't know? I know you learn a lot when you're editing the podcast for us, but.
Well, I had the questions about when we went to Juneau, and, I didn't know about the cemetery headstones that had like lambs or the angels, which was like that one concentrated area of the children's grave sites and stuff like that.
Sort of the baby land.
Some of the destroyed headstones that you said that they tried to fix but probably weren't using the right materials for it, it was a lot of interesting things to try to explore, the different cemeteries and stuff like that. So
it's always amazing to me how, and like even here in Colorado or even on the East Coast, Alaska, all the places where I visited cemeteries, every cemetery is similar but different. Like there's never a cemetery that looks exactly like another cemetery. The layouts are always a little bit different. The types of materials they're using are always different. You know, the one in Juneau had so many of the flat stones as opposed to the, you know, upright stones. And of course, Skagway, it was a lot of wooden markers as opposed to stone markers. So even though they're not all that far apart from each other necessarily, they used very different materials to set up their cemeteries.
And then also when we finally ended the cruise and did the land cruise and went to Fairbanks and went to that cemetery too, finding out about the history of the Great Flood in the 60s there, which they really kind of commemorate all throughout the town, and that they're working on trying to redo the markers and redo the organization in the cemetery itself. You also have to realize that, you know, we were there in record high heat. In Fairbanks, it was really kind of miserable because those guys don't really have air conditioning. They don't really need air conditioning most of the year. And even during the summer, it doesn't nearly get that warm. But it was, you have to do the contrast to that in less than 6 months. a lot of that cemetery could be under feet of snow.
Mm-hmm. Several feet.
And could be under snow for a very long time. And that's why you see a lot of those markers have different type of growths to them, because mm-hmm. they could be under wetness for a really long time. So it'd be also interesting to go see them in February, although it'd be very dark.
True.
At that time too.
It'd be like twilight going into the cemetery.
Yeah.
Any of those cemeteries, it'd be like twilight because of where they are.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us today, for being my co-host. It's been fun.
I'm glad I could help.
There's been lots of giggling that will be edited out mostly, but from us stumbling over the script, and also our cat, Salem, has chimed in a few times. I don't know if any of you will get to hear him, but he's discovered the joy of going out on the back deck when we let him, but he's not allowed to be out there unsupervised. And so he really was begging us to go open the back door for him this whole time.
Hopefully we'll get it edited. It sounded really good.
I know, I'm hoping.
Thank you for joining us on this first episode in our Alaska Cemetery series. To learn more about Skagway and Gold Rush Cemetery, visit our website, theordinaryextraordinarycemetery.com, to find links to the resources we use to research this episode.
And to see pictures of Gold Rush Cemetery, visit us on our social media pages. We are on Facebook and Instagram at Ordinary Extraordinary Cemetery, and on Twitter at Ord Extra Sim. And if you have enjoyed this episode or any of our other episodes, please consider leaving us a 5-star review and a comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Thank you.
Until we meet again. Get to have bloopers at the end, like Revel at Large.
You can totally do the bloopers.
All right, go ahead and re-record that one more time. Yeah, no, say it like this.
So. You could totally do that if you really wanted to.
No, I haven't read this at all. So.
I know.
So this is going to suck.
Don't do this part. I'm going to introduce
Lundberg.
Murray Lundberg.
Murray?
Yeah.
Okay. But, and we got double-sided print. Oh my God.
I always do it that way to try and save paper. You know. Welcome to the Ordinary Extraordinary Cemetery, where every death had a life and every life had a story. My name is Jenny Johnson.
Hello, and I'm Diane Hartshorn.
That does not sound like Diane Hartshorn.
Okay, I'm not gonna do that.
Be quiet. I'm gonna start over. Great, now we're gonna giggle. Whew, okay.
Although their government is claiming territory, including Skagway, where they briefly established a post.
Shh, Salem, not right now. No.
Yep. According to records, there are many buried where...
We apologize for the interruption, folks.
I really hope he can be heard. I'm going to go get my old man glasses.
Anna! You're going to be so cute.
I hope this doesn't ruin everything. I'm sorry.
No, you're not ruining anything. Although I might have to get a picture of us later. Because this is so cute. You're adorable. I don't know where we were.
I know where I am.
All right, I just finished.
Local ladies of the night. K-N-I-N-G-N-G.
Okay, so I can't spell. That was all me. Comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Thank you.
Do I really get to say this part?
You really get to say this part.
Until we meet again.